Okay, let's do this. This is our first video episode of Read or Die a Slave. If you're listening in audio only, it's now available in video on X. If you, for some reason, you want to stare at my face. If you want to just continue to listen as audio, obviously, since you're listening to it, you know it's still available as audio. If you want a deeper explanation of why I'm doing video, go find the Dispatches from Creative Isolation podcast. I did an episode yesterday explaining at length why I'm messing around with video. And one of the other things that I explained, which is going to play into what we're doing here today to a large degree, is I talked about experimenting instead of focusing on an entire book to focus on ideas in the book. And then at times allow the ideas that I focus on to be things that are difficult, to be things that are difficult to talk about, things that are difficult for people to hear sometimes because they're outside of their perspective. And the point of that being, it makes our brains stronger. Our beliefs, even if our beliefs never change, just being exposed to other point of views, other genres, other ideas, can strengthen our own. That's the short version. The long version, once again, is in the episode. So in honor of that, we are picking probably one of the most difficult topics to talk about, one of the most misunderstood topics to talk about, and I'm doing it at a weird time. I'm doing it between Christmas and New Year's. And the topic is, what is the difference between... You know what? Actually, let me read you the quote from the book, and I'll tell you where it's sprouting from. I think that's a better way to do it. The book we're talking about is The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry. This is a book about the Son of Sam case, and in particular, it is a theory about the Son of Sam case. And it's a big, big book. It's a big boy. So here's the quote from the introduction, and then I'll tell you who wrote the introduction, which is important as well. My fascination with the ultimate evil comes from a desire to explore how people conflate different shades of evil. I've always been interested in experts of the occult for their fascinating knowledge, but also for their gross misinterpretations. Terry is no different. Though the term Satanist is used quite liberally in this book, I believe Maury finally came to realize that true Satanists are not devil worshippers. In fact, far from it. True practitioners of Satanism are far more aligned with atheism and libertarianism than with any religion. Still, that doesn't mean that there aren't individuals, whether Catholics, Jews, Muslims, or Satanists, who use their religion or lack thereof as a means to morally justify or simply conceal their aberrant behavior. Who said this? This is Joshua Zeman. Joshua Zeman is a documentary filmmaker. He had the opportunity to know Maury Terry near the end of his life. Joshua Zeman has made movies. Typically, he kind of lives, his work lives somewhere mostly focused on true crime, though sometimes it does veer a little towards the occult because of the nature of the crimes. Cropsey, which is kind of about an urban legend. Killer Legends, which is kind of the same thing. Murder Mountain, some of you may have seen. It was, a four-part miniseries on Netflix about these groups growing marijuana in Humboldt County and the murders committed to protect them, to protect their crops. Another thing he did for, I believe it was on A&E, which was, I think now this ID. Is that now ID? I think it's Investigation Discovery, I think. The Killing Season, big fan of this show. This is the show that introduced me to the Long Island serial killer case. And in case you didn't know, I'm kind of a true crime junkie. And this is our first true crime book. So The Killing Season starts off in Long Island and then moves across the country looking at cases that are similar, which is typically... basically it's a show about how women who work in prostitution are being murdered across the country in huge numbers, and nobody is really paying attention because they work in prostitution. But the show that he did, the documentary that he did that is most relevant here, is The Sons of Sam. This is something he just did for Netflix, I think last year. Sons of Sam, A Descent into Madness. That's Sons of Sam, plural, because the theory of Maury Terry is that there was a group, that David Berkowitz did not commit the crimes himself, but there was a group committing these. And since we're talking about Satanism, you can kind of guess what direction we're going. We are dealing with the Satanic Panic, which is what Maury Terry himself got lost in. And the book, obviously, you can see it happen in the book, sort of. You know, maybe you get wrapped up in the book and you don't actually see it happen. But if you watch the documentary does a good job of giving you the theories from the book while also kind of telling you Maury's personal story alongside it. And you can kind of see how he got lost down there and he kind of got sucked into it as well. That particular point about him getting lost in that is encapsulated in what Zeman says here, I believe. And though the term Satanism is quite used quite liberally in this book, I believe Maury Terry finally came to realize that true Satanists are not devil worshippers. That distinction is, or the lack of that distinction is how things like the Satanic Panic and all these other things can happen. Because we're not clear on terminologies. And to be fair, when we're talking about the word Satanist, the terminology here is confusing. And that's kind of what I wanted to do this episode, because it does get conflated, it does get mixed up. And when that happens, one consequence of what happens is that sometimes people who commit crimes get away with them because the confusion allows them to get away. You know, the investigation gets derailed into this messy confusion of conspiracy instead of being able to delineate the facts. And that requires distinctions. And sometimes those distinctions are words. It's weird. People get weird, get words confused. How does that happen? Does that ever happen? I can't believe that happens. Yeah. So it's pretty much one of the good definitions that we could use for the internet. Place where words get confused. So, the other thing about why this distinction I think is important is because when we throw terms around kind of haphazardly, it allows us to... Here, let me tell you what happens. I live in Texas. I know a lot of wonderful, kind-hearted people here who love Donald Trump. But certain ignorances and certain fears often lead them to being called racists or terrorists. I grew up in California. I know lots of wonderful, kind-hearted people there who are progressive activists. And ignorance and certain fears often lead them to being labeled degenerates and terrorists because we're just throwing these words around. We're not actually confronting the difficulty of distinctions, and we're not dealing with the difficulties of differences. We're making things black and white to make it easier on ourselves. I want to deal with the gray. And doing that, in this case, I feel like I'm a good person to kind of weigh in on this. You know, they say you can sit around waiting for somebody to do something, or you can do it yourself. You know, write the book that you wish somebody wrote. Write the album you wish somebody wrote. This topic is something I wish was covered more, but nobody that I've seen covers it. So that means that I should. Since I know that it's something that needs to be done, I should know at least enough to create a starter on that. So while that word may freak you out, I hope that you'll listen, just because what we're talking about here is definitions. We're not talking about what people should believe. I don't know if I've said this already, but I strongly believe in working on how we think as opposed to what we think. That the mechanisms of the way we think, the actual action of thinking, that's how we think. But when we talk about the internet, a lot of times we talk about what people should think, what they should believe, telling people who they should be. All I'm concerned with is being able to be smarter. If we're smarter, then we can be better who we are, who we want to be, and we can better think what we want to think. So I hope you stick with this and that we can think about how to use these terms and not worry about all the other stuff. It will come in here, but this isn't an advertisement for anything. This is really just about words. You see, when I was a teenager, I was a bit of a metalhead. And if you listen to enough heavy metal, especially in the 90s, it seems like, yeah, the transition into like the uprising of like black metal and death metal and all these things. So just by mere exposure to the music, to, you know, a lot of these bands play with symbolism. They don't even know sometimes what they're using. Some of them do, and some of them believe things. It's across the spectrum, of course. But just through mere exposure of that, listening to enough metal, at least at the time that I did, you learn about things like Satanism. Just in the same way as if you listen to enough punk, at least back when I did, this is also something I went to, you start to learn about skinheads, you start to learn about neo-Nazis, which is not to say that you're becoming these things, you just learn about their existence and you learn terminology and so forth. In the same way that progressives, not all progressive people believe in socialism, some do, but just by being in that vicinity, they learn about Marxism. In the same way that strong Second Amendment supporters, eventually, going around other people who love guns, going to shooting ranges, going to gun shows, you're going to be exposed to the idea of militias and sovereign citizens. Doesn't mean you're involved in it. It just means you're going to know that those things exist because these things are all connected in some way where you're just going to learn it from being exposed to it. So once again, that doesn't mean that metalheads are Satanists or devil worshippers. Some are. Nor doesn't mean that they're being indoctrinated. Just like it doesn't mean punks, by listening to punk, become violent racists. Almost all don't. Nor does it mean that progressive people, just by being progressive, believe that all private property should be stolen and become the property of the state. Some do. It also doesn't mean that people with strong beliefs in the Second Amendment are going to become domestic terrorists. These are just things you're connected to that you learn about the existence of. That's my only point here. So because of that, because of listening to that metal music when I was younger, I know some of these terms. And I know the distinctions and differences in these terms. So that's why I have the information to be able to at least give, like I said, a starter here. Once again, not an expert, just mildly knowledgeable, which puts me heads and tails above most people. As Zeman said, certainly certain individuals and cultures and subcultures choose those paths, but it's just certain individuals. It's not the blanket of the whole group. So I think these are important distinctions, especially when you're picking up a book like The Ultimate Evil, because the author himself gets lost in this stuff. So it can be very easy for you to get lost in this stuff. So I think it's very valuable to have this information, but I think it's valuable information in general. There are three main distinctions to be made here. And I have to be careful in the words I use because some of these terms can be muddy. Our common distinctions are going to be Satanists with a lowercase s. And then Satanists with a capital S, which is two groups. You have the main two groups, the Church of Satan and the Temple of Satan. Okay? Those three. There's three different distinctions there. So let's start with the first one. What do I mean when I say lowercase capital S? Lowercase, this is just like the general term that we use. Satanic cult. It's not a capital S, we're putting a lowercase s. This is a term we use. This is why things get murky when we talk about these things, because this is a common word that we use. Something's evil, it's satanic. It's a common word we throw out. And when we throw that out, we're not aware that it also has a specific use case, which is what I mean when I say capital S. But there are groups that you could use that lowercase s for. But I think a better use for these satanic cults, these lowercase s cults, is to use the term devil worshippers. Because it's the one, the distinction that Zeman makes. And I think it more encapsulates their belief structure. Now, there is no one united group when you talk about this stuff. There isn't one, you know, devil worship, and then this is a branch, and this is a branch, and this is a branch. The way these things, from what I've seen, the way these things develop is some dude, usually a dude, has a crazy idea. He wants to start a cult. And here's his crazy beliefs. And he pulls people in. This two or three people over here have some crazy beliefs, and they want to create a cult, and they pull some people in. And then they go dark. You know, that's the, they become lowercase s. They start to actually worship evil. It's weird, but it's true. This happens. But it's not an organized religion. That's why the term cult is applied here. Because they're not organized religions. They just kind of develop around people. Kind of like the Branch Davidians developed around David Koresh. That wasn't an organized religion. It was started out supposedly as Christian, but small s Satanists are Satanists in the way that Branch Davidians and the Moonies are Christians, which is to say they aren't really. They take the beliefs and they change them. They don't even believe the same things. So when I say they're not an organized religion and they're cults, what I mean is they're kind of just being made up on the spot. And this is something that you can see taking effect throughout the Satanic Panic, because the Satanic Panic at its heart, for the most part, was a social contagion. It was an idea that got into the media promoted it. We've seen this plenty of times. And it got blown completely out of proportion. And when I say got blown out of proportion, it means that there was a small subset of things that happened that were real. That there were crimes associated with groups like this. But if you want to see the conflation of this, I can recommend a documentary called The Satanic Panic and the Religious Battle for the Imagination. It's a great documentary. It's about this guy named the Geek Preacher. I don't remember his real name. But he grew up playing Dungeons and Dragons, but he's also a Christian preacher. And one of the things that got sucked into the Satanic Panic was Dungeons and Dragons. So this documentary, it talks about the reality of Dungeons and Dragons compared to the panic that got around it. And it talks about a lot of these characters that were conflating the Satanic Panic and how most of them were discredited. And one of them, wow, he was... A few years ago, was arrested for trading drugs for sex through a group that he ran called Doctors and Lawyers for a Drug-Free Youth. So, not exactly the highest credibility people. Great documentary to see kind of how they took this game, this fantasy game for children, and it got conflated into like this occult thing. But with all that said, as I said, there were actual crimes being committed by these groups. These groups actually did exist. There were small s satanic or devil worshipping groups committing crimes. They're committing horrible crimes. There's evidence of their rituals. There's evidence of their crimes. There's evidence of the animals that they sacrificed. If you go in and watch enough of this stuff, there's law enforcement people saying that the stuff existed. And they experienced it. So it was out there. And Terry himself, in the book, he finds burned out buildings with occult graffiti. He finds slaughtered German shepherds. These things in Untermeyer Park, they find these buried German shepherds who have been murdered. So these things did exist. But once again, what we're talking about here is devil worship. Small s Satanists. These groups actually believe in a supernatural being. And they worship that supernatural being, which is the personification of evil. So they revel in aberrant and sinister acts. These are not conspiracy theories. This is stuff that people actually believe. It's out there. You can find it. The internet, you can find almost anything. These people do exist. This is not a conspiracy theory. The small group, from what I've seen, is a very small group. But because of the worst word, satanic, being used, it gets confused with other groups like the Church of Satan and the Satanic Temple. And that's why I want to get a distinction, because these two groups are about as different from that as you could possibly be. Yet at the same time, because of that word, they get packaged together. So when you watch Sons of Sam or you read a book like this, it could be really easy to hear about these satanic cults and then see a place called the Church of Satan and think, same people. Not the same people. Not the same people at all. Just like what I was saying earlier, owning a gun doesn't make you a Proud Boy. Owning a gun doesn't make you a murderer. You know, being a progressive doesn't mean that you live and breathe Marx. You might, but it doesn't mean you do. Living in Texas doesn't mean you're a racist, so forth and so on. These are associations we make that we need to kind of break up a little bit, a lot bit, maybe. So once again, Satanic Church and Satanic Temple. Reason also that we should talk about this is recently in Iowa, in the State House in Iowa for Christmas, they had religious displays put up in the State House. Obviously, there was a manger for Christianity. And as part of celebrating religious pluralism, they allowed, I think they had a menorah out for Jews. And then also, the Satanic Temple had petitioned to put up a display for themselves, a holiday display for them and for their own religion, which, by the way, they are an organized religion, which is recognized by the state and has tax exemption status, is a legitimately organized religion. And the state allowed them to do this, and then someone saw it and destroyed the altar. Now, I believe this happened because of what we're talking about, because of this conflation of the two groups. This person who did it was a Christian, and what he saw offended him because he thought it was a representation of evil, which would be I guess a direct threat to his own beliefs, not knowing that there's a difference between devil worshipers and the temple and what they have represented here. So I think that lack of distinction actually led in this case to a crime. Also, when I heard about that case, I looked around and I was listening to a lot of different things, just kind of hear what people were saying about it, because I think in my mind I was already starting, having been most of the way through this book as well, starting to brew this episode that we're doing now, was starting to brew in my mind as something that, oh, I think I need to know more about this. What are people saying about this thing in Iowa? And I found an episode of Tim Cass, which is Tim Pool. I don't know a ton about him. I know he was on Rogan a long time ago. I know that he was a lefty and now he's a righty. I know he's supposed to be kind of anti-establishment and so forth. I don't know a ton more about it than that. I started to listen to a few minutes of the episode where they started to talk about this subject, and I had to turn it off. I had to turn it off because they were so wrong. And it wasn't their fault, because once again, it's this distinction between the two things that they weren't understanding. They were referring to this altar as something that has worshiping Satan, which is not what the temple represents, but they didn't know that. And I think that was the point where I realized, yeah, I kind of have to do this episode. Somebody has to know this. So, capital S Satanists have two major distinctions from these devil worshipers. There may be more, but these are the two important ones for the scope of Maury Terry's book. Obviously, I can't cover everything, but neither the church nor the temple worship Satan, worship the devil, or any other supernatural character. In fact, they don't believe in Satan. They don't believe in the devil. They don't believe in any supernatural characters. They don't even believe in God, because they're atheists. What do they worship then? They worship the ego, the individual, the self. There is no God. There is no devil. There is no worship there. That's a huge distinction. So that's the first distinction I want to make. But you might ask yourself, well, if they're just atheists, why do they use the word Satan? As far as I can tell, this goes back to Anton LaVey, who founded the church. And this was 1969, so it was following a lot of, like, you had this, all these religious cults in the 60s that developed, and then you had, like, where it started to go wrong, Manson, for example. Things started to go dark. He developed this at about that same time. And Anton LaVey, when he was a younger man, he was, I don't know, probably throughout his life, was a pretty great organ player, from what I understand. And he would play the organ at carnivals and circuses. He actually was a carny. He would travel around, and he was the organ player. He played the music. And then through that, I guess, because of tents and traveling, he also got involved with Christian tent revivals. And he would play the organ for them too. So, you know, like Saturday night, he'd be playing for the circus. Sunday morning, he'd be playing for the Christian revival meetings. And through both observing the carnival barkers and whatever the circus equivalent of that is, and observing the fire and brimstone preachers, he started to really get a taste for showmanship and understand the importance of showmanship and symbolism. So when he started to develop his ideas, his philosophies, and he wanted to make it into a religion, he chose the word Satan. And the reason he chose it has less to do with the Bible and more to do with John Milton. John Milton wrote a fictional story called Paradise Lost, which most people are aware of. Some people think this actually is in the Bible, but this is actually from a fictional work, which is the idea of the fallen angels. And there's a famous line that the character of Satan says in the book, "It's better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven." That comes from John Milton. And the book was actually a political book disguised as a religious fictional story. And the story about it is that Satan is the rebel, and that God in this story represents tyranny, which, like I said, representation of political philosophies. Well, for Anton LaVey, that was a representation of what he had experienced, this tyranny of, not God necessarily, but the tyranny of organized religion. And he saw his beliefs, his more atheist beliefs, as being the rebel against the tyranny. So for him, the metaphor of Paradise Lost was very powerful. So as the rebel, he chose Satan from Paradise Lost as the symbol, which is why, as I understand it, he chose that word. There are far more complexities, again, and once again, I'm not an expert, but this is my understanding. And I think it's enough. I think it's enough for at least to start for a general understanding on the distinctions here. Now, as far as the temple and whether they worship the devil, I'm going to read you two things from their FAQ page on their own website. This is an FAQ, so it's in a Q&A format. Do you worship Satan? Question. Answer, no. Nor do we believe in the existence of Satan or the supernatural. Question, do you promote evil? No. The Satanic Temple holds the basic premise that undue suffering is bad, and that which reduces suffering is good. So I think that says pretty clearly what they believe. That's one of the things I appreciate about that. It's very short, very to the point. The second distinction that we need to make between the capital S and the lowercase s groups revolves around the crimes that are often associated when we say satanic cults. In particular, when we look at the satanic panic period. And those two crimes are animal sacrifice and child sexual abuse. Those are the two big ones. So nothing from small s satanic groups precludes them from either of these activities. Doesn't mean they do, but there's nothing that precludes them, because once again, they're not an organized religion. They can have whatever beliefs their particular little cult has. On the other hand, the beliefs of both the temple and the church are explicitly opposed to both of these activities. And I think this, when we're talking about these crimes, this is an even more important distinction than the one we just made about their belief in a being or non-belief in a being. This is belief about how they treat other living beings. So when we look at the church, first of all, is of the two, is, as I said, it developed in the late 60s. So it is more of a libertarian mindset. It's more focused on individual freedoms. Kind of like, I do what I want, you do what you want. And they're also more Epicurean. This is not a word a lot of people are familiar with, but Epicurean is about balancing. It's about a balance and control when seeking pleasure. In other words, they believe in pleasure, but you must be in control of your desire for pleasure. So it's indulgence rather than compulsion. Something like hedonism is about compulsion. It's about just consuming and consuming and consuming. Epicureanism is more about, I want that. Now's the appropriate time. This is the appropriate way. Control. So they do indulge, but they are in control of their indulgence. That's kind of the two mindsets that really, other than the worship of the self and the ego, that are fundamental to the church. So what did LaVey himself say when we talk about children and animals? And I think this is actually from the Satanic Bible. These are the actual words on those beliefs. The Satanist would not intentionally hurt others by violating their sexual rights. If you attempt to impose your sexual desires on others who do not welcome your advances, you are infringing on their sexual freedom. Therefore, Satanism does not advocate rape, child molesting, sexual defilement of animals, or any other form of sexual activity which entails the participation of those who are unwilling or whose innocence or naivety would allow them to be intimidated or misguided into doing something against their wishes. Under no circumstances would a Satanist sacrifice an animal or a baby! Exclamation point. There are sound and logical reasons why the Satanist could not perform such sacrifices. Man, the animal, is the godhead to the Satanist. The purest form of carnal existence reposes in the bodies of animals and human children who have not grown old enough to deny themselves natural desires. They can perceive things that the average adult human could never hope to. Therefore, the Satanist holds these beings in a sacred regard, knowing he can learn much from these natural magicians of the world. So I think it says it pretty clear there. No animals, no children. In fact, animals and children for them are the purest embodiment of the principles that they hold dear. As for the temple has seven tenets. I think of those seven tenets, we can get a pretty clear idea of whether they would do anything like this. And also, by the way, of the two groups, the temple was founded in 2012, I believe, and they are more in line with those times because they're the more progressive of the two, as opposed to libertarian. Number one, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. Number two, the struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions. Number three, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. Number four, the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. Number five, belief should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's own beliefs. Number six, people are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that might have been caused. And number 7, every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought. The spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. I think those say pretty clear as well where they stand on that. What's also worth noting, these 7 tenets were what was on the altar that was destroyed. So it's very clear to me, we have, in general, as a society, we have a muddled understanding of this word, Satanism. The lowercase, the uppercase, the being, the not being, the atheism versus the actual, what can be termed no better than the worship of evil. Both exist, but they're different. There's a distinction there. The church and the temple are not the people we're talking about when we read a book like The Ultimate Evil. So when we see like an altar being destroyed of theirs, it's actually an attack on the wrong people. There is still a group out there. There are still groups out there that believe and do these things, these evil things. It's just not these people. And that's really important. I mean, it's really important when we're talking about crimes to be looking at the right people. Otherwise, the right people get to keep doing what they do, and the wrong people suffer for it. Now, I know that because of religious convictions and stuff, the association of that word makes people find the temple and the church distasteful. And that's okay. It's different to say, I don't believe what they believe and I'm offended by what they believe. There's a difference between believing and saying that and saying that they do what these guys do, which is harm children and animals and commit crimes and maybe have involvement in something like the Son of Sam. It's a huge difference. It's a huge distinction. There's also a third distinction that I want to make here. And I believe it's an extremely important one. Capitalist Satanists, they're out in public. They have websites, they have locations, they have t-shirts, they have social media presence. But the lowercase S Satanists, the devil worshippers, they hide in the shadows. They don't tell people what they believe. They don't tell people who they are. And because of the understandable confusion between the word of Satan or satanic in these two cases, people often associate these people over here, the church and the temple and so forth, with this concept of this grand evil cabal. When you actually, as we just did, look at their actual beliefs, you can see that the idea of this grand evil cabal and what they do, if it exists, is against everything that they believe. So if this exists and we are in some battle against this, these people are on your side, not against you. That's an important distinction as well. But I think nothing clears up whether the capital S Satanists are involved with things like this more than one more thing from the temple's FAQ page, because it's so clear, so brief, and so blunt. Q, I want to sell my soul. Get rich, join the Illuminati, etc. Answer, please look elsewhere. So, I know, weird time for an episode like this. Weird topic, difficult topic, but I feel like, you know, in productivity, there's this term, eat the frog. Do the most difficult thing first. This was a good way to break into that. And I have more episodes coming on the ultimate evil. Now that we have this distinction a little bit clear, I think we can move forward. We can talk a little bit about the crime and the theory of the crimes. I'm not going to go into details. This isn't an excavation of the book. It's just some thoughts that I have on the book And I think I'm going to get two more episodes out of this. So keep it in mind. If you made it this far and it was difficult for you, and maybe you're still not buying into everything that we talked about here, I still give you credit because you stuck through it and you challenged yourself. And that's the whole point of this, to just strengthen our brains, to make us better thinkers. So I hope you guys are enjoying Read or Die a Slave, even as it's developing further. I know I'm going to lose people when I deal with topics like this, when I deal with difficult topics in general, but I'm just trying to be true to myself. That when I see something that I want to talk about, that even if it's difficult, I'm going to talk about it. And my intentions are all good. I just want people to be stronger and better able to use their mind, more interested in reading, more interested in making the world a better place and making their lives better. And that comes from strength and knowledge and being able to practice how we think so that we can worry about what we think afterwards. So if this was your thing, thank you. If it wasn't your thing, also thank you. And I hope you'll come back because I do plan on dealing with all kinds of topics. At some point, we might be doing topics about Christianity. We might be doing topics about gun control. We might be doing topics about pro-guns. We might do all. Because I am driven to read by curiosity, not ideology. I'm not here to promote any ideas. I'm just here to present ideas and let us think about them. So I hope you're in for that ride. Because it's a lot more fun when I don't have to do it alone.